أشهد أن محمد رسول الله أشهد أن محمد رسول الله
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم إن الحمد لله إن الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستهديه ونؤمن به ونتوكل عليه ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فهو المهتد ومن يضلل فلن تجد له وليا مرشدا أما بعد فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم إن فرعون علا في الأرض وجعل أهلها شيعا يستضعف طائفة منهم يذبح أبناءهم ويستحيي نساءهم إنه كان من المفسدين صدق الله العظيم وقال النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم إن الله تكفل بي لأهل الشام أو كما قال عليه الصلاة والسلام. Respected elders and dear brothers, one of the most often repeated incidents in the Noble Quran is the story of Musa alayhi salatu wasalam and his interaction with Fir'aun. In more than 20 juz of the Quran, we find a repetition of the story of Musa alayhi salatu wasalam and Fir'aun in different ways, in different parts of the interaction of the two of them. And a very salient feature of the life of Fir'aun, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala encapsulates it in the ayah of Quran, إِنَّ فِرْعَوْنَ عَلَى فِي الْأَرْضِ, that Fir'aun reached his peak and oppressing the people, the Coptic people of Musa alayhi salatu wasalam, وَجَعَلَ أَهْلَهَا شِيَعًا, and he caused disunity and factions among the people, breaking them into different classes and different groups. يَسْتَضْعِفُ طَائِفَةً مِّنْهُمْ, taking advantage of the weak among them. يُذَبِّحُ أَبْنَاءَهُمْ وَيَسْتَحِي نِسَاءَهُمْ, he went to the extent of slaughtering the male children. And وَيَسْتَحِي نِسَاءَهُمْ, and left the females to stay alive. Now many a times we read the story and we think that it's probably something that happened many centuries ago, and it's some fable that happened. And sometimes we think that Quran is just a storybook. But brothers and elders, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala be my witness that we are living in the 21st century. In an era which is referred to as the global age, or rather a global village, where communication is in a matter of seconds from one part of the world to the other part of the world, where chance of human rights and the progress of humanity and not only reaching the moon but even staying on the moon is being spoken about. But in as recent times, just a few months ago, we've seen the fall of a regime that probably can be likened to that of Fir'aun. And that was the regime, the Assad regime, that had fallen just 2 months ago in the beginning of December, that dominated the land of Syria, the land of Sham, for almost 5 decades. In recent times it was Bashar al-Assad, and prior to him his father Hafid al-Assad. Such degree of horror and terror and oppression on the people of that part of the world that it is almost unimaginable. Unimaginable. There is probably hardly a person who you would meet that doesn't have some story to tell. Some relative or somebody who he knows who had faced that degree of oppression. And the oppression was not only, it had multiple dimensions. Yes, it had a dimension of geopolitics and to entrench his rulership and sovereignty over the land. It had that dimension. It had the dimension of the different international powers that were playing and basically had made the land of Syria a playground for control and dominion in the land. And there was also an ideological dimension. It was not the only dimension, but the sectarian divide also was an element in the entire oppression. And that is the Sunni-Shia divide. These were multifaceted forms or reasons for the oppression. And now Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala had granted the people of Syria safety and granted them relief from that form of oppression. I'm just going to relate to you one experience. Allah granted us the opportunity to visit Syria last week. I'm just going to narrate one incident to you. And please bear with me. And I seek your forgiveness before I narrate the incident to you, because it is a bit graphic. And I'm asking you for forgiveness before it, but for you to understand the level of oppression that people went through and the people lived through for so many years and for so many decades. Outside the city of Damascus is a suburb called Saydinaya. And Saydinaya was famous or notorious for housing a prison which was dedicated to political prisoners only. There were many other prisons for political prisoners in other parts of the country, but this had become the most notorious one. And it was famous that if anybody went there, there was no coming back. Very few people managed to get their way out of there, whether it was through payment or whatever it may be. But when you went there, hardly a person survived the ordeal. And it was explained to us and told to us, so this prison is on the outskirts of the city of Damascus, about 30 kilometers outside. On the border, the mountain range was extremely cold. There was snow on the mountain range. You enter this facility. And as you enter the facility, there is no tour guide who is going to explain to you. It's a raw crime scene, as it was 2 months ago when the regime had fallen and the rebel forces, or rather the mujahideen, had come in and freed the people. So before you enter the prison, in the courtyard, in the roads leading up to it, in the building, around it, inside the building, all over you see holes and digging that had taken place. All over the place, like some sort of excavation, a few meters here, a few meters, all over the place. And when we asked, why is this so strange? Why do you find all of these holes all over the place? So we were informed that when the time came to now remove or to free the prisoners, they were continuously hearing screams of people. So the suspicion was that probably there are underground cellars in which there are some prisoners which need to be freed. And that was the case. They did find certain underground cells in which in some instances prisoners were found alive, and in other instances a few weeks later, at the day of the fall of the regime, a few weeks after that, other prisoners were discovered, but they had already passed on. In any case, you walk into this facility. On the outside of this facility, you find posters all over the place of people who would put up a picture of a family member to say that the only knowledge we have, that last we had seen this person was on this particular date, and if you have any information about him, please contact us, here's a phone number. So people came there with the hope that probably they may find somebody of theirs. The first section of the prison that we had seen, it's like almost like a farm where you have kraal pens, where people were stuffed into small cages in holding pens. Maybe that probably, it was just an estimation, probably it was like some sort of interrogation area. Then, as we walked into the prison, we came to an area which you could see there was sand, so there was some digging, and it now goes into an underground. No sign of light, no sunlight, no electricity, absolutely pitch dark. And in this underground compound, there were small rooms, probably maybe a square meter, 1 meter by 1 meter. And adjoining it was a small toilet. This toilet was just a hole in the ground and feces all over the place. And the roof and the walls are full of cobwebs, dark, thick, black cobwebs, all over the place. And you can see that this must have been a center for solitary confinement. In any case, we moved about, we come to another section of the prison. And another section of the prison was multiple rooms. And probably about 20 or 30 rooms. Each of these rooms probably 20 meter by 20 meter in size. And we were informed that this was the section where they would stuff 200 to 300 people at a time. When they got news that now the regime had fallen, everybody fled. So all these rooms were full of clothing. People just left everything and ran. And the other side of the prison, we were informed that on a daily basis, I don't know, but 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock every day, a list would be read out. And these were the people whose names were given that today you are going to be executed. Actually, when the regime fell, there were people who came out and said that an announcement was made for my name, was already put on the list, I was supposed to be executed at least. And if you read about the prison, they talk of a red section and a white section. I don't know exactly which was which, but in any case, we go to the extreme end of the prison. And yet it gets a bit more horrific. It appeared to be like a torture cell. It appeared to be the execution room or the butcher room, basically. There was this one device, probably 10 meter in size, that had a plate at the bottom with a bit of a space and another plate on top, huge steel plate. And what appears to be, because there's very few people that are going to narrate what had happened to them. Probably you won't find anybody, maybe a warden or somebody, who is going to reveal what had transpired. But this had an hydraulic, it was almost like a compressor to crush the bones and the bodies of people. And in that room alongside, if anybody's been in the meat industry, you know what they talk of, a butcher boy. This huge saw type of mechanism that has a blade in the center. There was one like that in the room. The assumption is probably it was used to dismember the bodies and the limbs of people. And there was another device, a mechanism that I had seen there that almost appeared to be like a shredding machine. You know, you take a piece of paper, it has, the shredding machine has blades in it, and it allows the paper to be shredded into smaller pieces. It appeared to be something like that. And there is the stench and the grime and the filth that you see in all of this. Walking around in this particular facility, and the ayah of Quran rings in your mind where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said, فَلَا تَحْسَبَنَّ اللَّهَ غَافِلًا عَمَّا يَعْمَلُ الظَّالِمُونَ. That do not ever think that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is unaware of what the oppressors have done. There are many more details and we do not have the time, but I'd like to narrate one more incident to you, just to give you an understanding of the level of the iman of the people, and the hope and the optimism and the jubilation that they are currently experiencing. So we were driving in an area, and Allah be my witness, but it's my assumption, I think the level of atrocities and the level of destruction that we have seen in visuals in Gaza over the last 15 months is incomparable to what had happened over the last 15 years in Syria. It is many, many fold much more. Much more. If you look at the extent of the size of land, the numbers, the figures, it's inexplainable. We were driving, it's not like you see one street and over another street that is damaged, or one suburb after another suburb. We drove and you see one village after another village after another village, and after, we must have drove for over an hour probably, and you don't see a soul in sight. Not a cat, not a dog, not a house that has survived. It's just a large expanse of areas that have been destroyed, home after home, systematically destroyed. Even after a building is bombed, you still probably would find some furniture, a window, a door, something that has remnant is left. These buildings have been systematically stripped to the core. Even the electrical wires are not there. Even if you stop and see, there's no even light fittings and electrical wires. One man showed us his house, even the steel in the concrete beams have been stripped off. In any case, we stopped at a masjid. Masjid is bombed. So we thought, masjid is a house of Allah. It is a place of solace. It is a place of tranquility. Let us see what it looks like inside. So we walk into this masjid. The minaret is almost half fallen down. Partially the walls are all collapsed. We walk into the masjid. And while we are taking a bit of pictures, an elderly man comes up to us. So I ask this elderly man, who are you? What are you doing here? I mean, there's nobody in sight. What are you doing here? So he narrates his incident. The elderly man, so he said that I was staying in this masjid, or in this area, I'm the muadzin of this masjid. And I stayed throughout the entire period of revolution in my area looking after my masjid. But about 5 years ago, it became unbearable. So the entire area, we all evacuated and left, and we went to stay in the refugee camp. And 2 months ago, when the regime had fallen, I made my way back to this masjid. So I told him, but you came back to the masjid, there's nothing here. Where's your family? How are you going to live here? So he said, no, I left my family back in Idlib in the refugee camp. But because this masjid is my masjid, I am responsible for this house of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So I have come to stay in this bombed masjid to raise the name of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in this masjid. This was his love for the house of Allah. And then we asked him to say the adhan for us. And he said adhan, and there wasn't a dry eye at that moment. When you see the man, the hope and the connection with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, because of the opportunity, and it's a lengthy incident, many other things he mentioned, but the hope that Allah has given them, and the link with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I will end off with this. Last week, Friday, we performed Salat al-Jum'ah in Halab, in Aleppo. And after Salat al-Jum'ah, like we are accustomed to, the masjid is full of musallis. So the person, we are leaving the masjid, and he's saying that it's such a nice feeling, the masjid is full. It didn't make sense to me. This is a normal thing anywhere in the world you go. So we're driving the car, and we pass by another masjid, and the musallis are all, it's full packed. And he's again expressing a sense of happiness that the masjid is full of people and so many people. So I asked him, but why are you saying this? Like, what's so strange about a masjid being full on a Friday? He says, you do not know what we went through. For so many years, our masajid could not be filled at the time of Jumu'ah Salah, let alone that if it was found that a young person specifically came frequently to the masjid for Salatul Fajr, there was a great likelihood that he would be arrested and taken into detention. Brothers and elders, we do not have time to discuss more of the details, but in this conclusion we will say that brothers and elders, Allah has given us opportunities in this country. Allah has given us an opportunity to practice our deen. We are at the doorstep of Ramadan. Let us not be the Muslims of Ramadan. Let us appreciate these bounties that Allah has given us. And let us not wait for the difficult days to come when we make amends in our life. Let this Ramadan that is on our doorstep be a means of us making a decision of change in our life. Not just change, but permanent change. In appreciating what Allah has given us and establishing our relationship with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Wa akhir da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. الحمد لله الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين لا عز إلا في طاعته ولا في رضاه ولا نعيم إلا في ذكره وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده وأشهد أن محمدا عبد الله ورسوله أما بعد عباد الله أوصيكم ونفسي أولا بتقوى الله والحذر من الظلم لأن الظلم ذنب عظيم وجرم خطير وقال الله سبحانه وتعالى عنها وإذ قال لقمان لابنه وهو يعظه يا بني لا تشرك بالله إن الشرك لظلم عظيم وأكثر القرآن في ذكر وعيد الظالمين وقال الله سبحانه وتعالى في هذا يا أيها الذين آمنوا أنفقوا مما رزقناكم من قبل أن يأتي يوم لا بيع فيه ولا خلة ولا شفاعة والكافرون هم الظالمون ففيه نوع من الظلم هو الشرك بالله سبحانه وتعالى والنوع الثاني هو ظلم العبد لغيره وهو المقصود بقوله صلى الله عليه وسلم لا تظالموا وفي قوله عليه الصلاة والسلام من كانت عنده مظلمة لأخيه فليتحلله منها فإنه ليس ثم دينار ولا درهم من قبل أن يؤخذ لأخيه من حسناته فإن لم يكن له حسنات أخذ من سيئات أخيه فطرحت عليه والله سبحانه وتعالى يقول إن الذين يأكلون أموال اليتامى ظلما إنما يأكلون في بطونهم نارا أقول ما تسمعون وأستغفر الله لي ولكم ولسائر المسلمين من كل ذنب فاستغفروه إنه كان للأوابين غفورا. الحمد لله الحمد لله الذي حرم الظلم على نفسه وجعله بين العباد محرما، وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، إذا أخذ الظالم أخذه أخذا شديدا. وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله الذي حذر من الظلم فقال: اتقوا الظلم فإن الظلم ظلمات يوم القيامة، صلى الله عليه وعلى آله وأصحابه. عباد الله، أوصيكم ونفسي أولا بتقوى الله والتعاون على الخير والتجنب عن الظلم بكل صورة وأشكال، وأعظم الظلم الإشراك بالله والكفران بآياته وانتهاك محارمه، وكذلك الظلم فيما بينكم بالأخذ الأموال بغير حق. عباد